In a moment, we're going to have the Bible read for us. And so what I'm going to ask you to do is actually to take out the leaflet that you were given. And on the inside left cover, you'll see the Bible passage for today. It's actually the end of Mark's Gospel. And in a few moments, it's going to be read for us. Before it is, though, I just want to say a few things that will help, particularly if you're joining us for the first time and you're wondering about what's going to happen over this next little while. I'm not sure about you, but I've never started watching a long-running TV show by watching the last episode first. But that's what we're going to ask you to do this morning. Having said that, sometimes I wish that I had, actually. You know, you've followed your favourite characters through multiple seasons of a show, through all their ups and downs, you've grown to know them and love them, and then for some completely stupid reason, in the very last episode, they introduced some random twist that makes you hate the show forever. You might be feeling a little bit like that because what you're about to hear is the last eight verses of a book that's gone for 16 chapters. You're kind of walking in at the end of a story that everyone else has read and everyone else knows how it ends, which means that at the moment it might not feel like it's making very much sense to you. So what I thought I'd do is I'd catch you up and quickly tell you the story so far. This is sort of like when you're watching a TV show and you know the episode begins with previously and they tell you what's happened. I'm going to do that for you, but I'm going to do it in 60 seconds, okay? We're in chapter 16 of Mark's account. In chapter 15, the hero, Jesus, died. He was executed by the authorities on trumped up charges. And it seems like everything is all over and lost, except that all along, Jesus had said he has come to die. He's come to lay down his life to achieve a great victory. If you look at the top right of your handouts, you'll see there the very first passage from chapter 10. Jesus says, the Son of Man, he's talking about himself, he did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And so even though this last section in chapter 16, it's going to introduce a pretty big twist, as you've already heard this morning, the hero is no longer dead, it shouldn't have come as a surprise to the disciples. Particularly because Jesus had told them three times along the way he would die, but that he'd rise again. And you can see all the references there on the right-hand side. Okay, so that's the background. That's all you need to know. With that background, what we're going to do is have chapter 16, verses 1 through 8 read for us. And if you want to follow along, it's on the bottom left there. And Aaron is going to read for us this morning. Thanks, Aaron.
Mark 16, verse 1. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James, and Salome bought spices so that it might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in white robes sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You're looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He has risen. He's not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he's going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid.
Alrighty, well, I'm going to get you to keep that handout open in front of you. The passage is on the left, and you can see on the right-hand side just a few notes and an outline of what I'm going to talk about for the next little while. Just if you are new amongst us, all I'm going to do is walk us through that passage, and then afterwards, like we do every Sunday, we'll pause to have questions. So if you have questions you want to ask about things that have been raised, there'll be a chance for you to ask that before we continue on in our service. Well, you can see there, point 1, going to anoint the body, verses 1 through 3. The first thing we notice is who is going to anoint Jesus' body for burial. In Mark chapter 16, it's not the famous 12 apostles, it's three women. And you can see their names there in verse 1. Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome. Now, without being sexist in any way, in that particular culture, usually it was the women who looked after such things. Maybe that's because, on the whole, actually, women tend to be more attentive and caring and thoughtful than men, especially in times of grief. But what I think Mark is doing is actually making a much more significant point for us. By focusing in on these three women, he's comparing their actions with that of the male disciples, all of whom had abandoned Jesus a couple of days before in his hours of greatest need. In fact, one of them, Judas, is the one who betrayed Jesus. By contrast, these women are still there. They haven't given up on Jesus, even in his death. I think what Mark is doing is that in a very quiet, unassuming way, he's honouring and paying tribute to the commitment of these women who have stuck with Jesus even as he breathed his last on Good Friday. And you can see there's a reference there from Mark chapter 15 on your handouts. They are still there at the end, even though all the blokes have run. And so in some ways it's no wonder that they're still here a couple of days later. They're not about to forget Jesus in a hurry. They're not about to just move on and forget him. As they have cared for Jesus in life, so they'll look after him in death. Even the fact that verse 2, you might have noticed, said that they have gone very early in the morning, I think suggests that these women knew that this is the most important thing for them to be doing at this moment. There is no place on earth where they would rather be than going to anoint the body for its burial. Now, having said that, and please don't hear me being critical when, as I said, the women have done so much more than the men, they don't have a particularly well thought out plan. It's true, we're told there in verse 1 that they've gone and bought spices to anoint the body, but they don't know how they'll physically get into the tomb to use them. And maybe in that detail, there's a sign to us of just how much stress they're under, of what grief does to you. You know that feeling when you've been through something so utterly traumatic that you find yourself almost wandering around, lost in a foggy daze. But the main takeaway from this first paragraph, from verses 1 through 3, is that clearly they don't think Jesus is alive. Clearly they don't think Jesus is alive. They know he's dead. They're under no illusions about what they're going to find when they get to the tomb. They are expecting to find a corpse. And if I put it this way, you don't spend money on expensive spices to stave off the stench of death unless you absolutely have to. Well, if it feels like I'm labouring the point, Jesus is dead, it's to shoot down any suggestion that Jesus might somehow be alive at this moment, that perhaps he didn't die on the cross those few days before. It's to shoot down those ridiculous fake news conspiracy theories that have evolved over the centuries. You know, claims like Jesus only fainted on the cross, he swooned, and then afterwards he walked away to start a new life somewhere else. Or the equally ridiculous claim that the disciples, who, as we've seen, they're utterly devastated, they're in complete disarray, but nevertheless, some people say the disciples, they managed to concoct and execute a Mission Impossible-style tomb heist where they'd steal the body and trick the entire world into thinking that he'd been raised to life again. Clearly, that's not what's going on here. Everyone knows that Jesus is dead. And yet, we've got that niggling thought in the back of our minds. Remember what Jesus said beforehand? Three times he said he would die and then he would rise again. All of which means that, to be honest, his followers probably shouldn't have given up quite so quickly. So, let's see what happens when the women arrive at the tomb with the stone that they know they're not going to be able to move. Okay, so now we're at verses 4 through 7. I'm going to read it again to us. This is the middle paragraph. Follow along with me as I read Mark 16, verses 4 through 7. But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You're looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." All right. What these three loyal women discover when they get there is that the very large stone, notice it's emphatic there, very large, not just a big stone, but a very large stone, it's been rolled away. And so as they step into the tomb, cautiously, I presume, to see what's going on, what they find, verse 5, they find a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and we're told they were alarmed. They were alarmed. Now, let me just point out, I think the word alarmed there is probably a bit of an understatement to describe their reaction. I say that for a couple of reasons. One is that the white robe on the young man, the white robe, it's suggestive of some kind of otherworldly being, like an angel. The reason I say that is because the only other time in Mark's account that we've met someone wearing a white robe was back in chapter 9, and you can see the reference there on your handout. In chapter 9, Jesus appears on a mountaintop in a white robe in transcendent splendor, transfigured in radiant glory. And so no doubt the women are a little bit alarmed to see someone here in a white robe. But the other reason, and perhaps this is more likely why they're alarmed, is just for the simple reason that their heads are spinning with a million unanswered questions about this empty tomb. Questions like, where's the body gone? Has someone stolen it? Why would someone steal the body? What use could they have for the body? Are the thieves still around? Are they coming for us next? And who are you, O white robe dude? Why are you just sitting there not doing anything about it? You can imagine there's a whole bunch of reasons why they're alarmed at this point. And yet what the man in the white robe does immediately is reassure them. Verse 6, don't be alarmed. Now, I don't know about you. When someone tells me to relax or don't stress, that generally doesn't work. It doesn't matter how they say it. If they say it very forcefully, don't be alarmed. Or if they say it in an annoyingly chilled back kind of voice, like, hey man, don't be alarmed, take a chill pill. That never actually helps, does it? And yet, before we hear their response, which I suspect is probably something along the lines of, why shouldn't we be alarmed? The young man attempts to calm them down. He knows why they're here. Verse 6, you're looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who was crucified. If you look at your handouts, you'll recall that we're looking at this Mark chapter 16. We've seen that some very faithful women have gone to anoint the body, but they weren't sure what would happen when they got there. And surprise, surprise, they've gotten there and things are not exactly as they expected. They are understandably alarmed by what's taken place. But the young man who is there, who tells them not to be alarmed, actually does something far more important in allaying their concerns and easing their fears. Look at what he goes on to say in verse 6. Verse 6, don't be alarmed. You're looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. What I think he's doing at this point is that he is reassuring the women that, in a sense, he was waiting for them. He was expecting them to come. And of course, at one level, it makes sense that someone would be there to prepare the body for burial, but what he's saying to them is that there's a lot more going on here and he knows it. In fact, he immediately gives them a reason why they might have hope, despite having headed off in very dark circumstances. Verse 6, he is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. He's reminding these three women of what Jesus had told them before, which clearly they've forgotten in the stress and grief of the last few days. He's reminding them of the one thing that actually changes everything, that the Jesus who was dead is alive, and more to the point, verse 7, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. And if they hurry up, they'll be able to find him there. Now, part of the reason why this ought not to have come as a surprise is because Jesus had already alerted his disciples to this a few days earlier. You can see the passage there from Mark chapter 14. Jesus had told them, "After I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." In a sense, we're being told that everything is playing out exactly the way Jesus said it would. It's all unfolding according to the plan that he shared previously with his disciples. Remember, three times he told them he'd die. Three times he told them he'd rise again on the third day. So in a sense, the tomb was always going to be empty. And even though the women are probably completely overwhelmed, even though they're probably unable to understand exactly what's taking place, the last thing that the young man tells them is there in verse 7, go tell his disciples and Peter. Go tell his disciples and Peter. Reminding us once again that the blokes aren't even here. But now it's time to tell them the good news that Jesus is alive. All right, the passage is going to wrap up then in verse 8, and you can see point 3 on your handouts there, ending on a cliffhanger. I say that because actually it ends with perhaps the biggest surprise of all. Now, the surprise actually is not that Jesus is alive. We've been expecting that. We've been anticipating it. It's happened exactly as Jesus said it would. The biggest surprise in some ways in Mark's account of Jesus' life is that it ends abruptly on a cliffhanger. Verse 8, trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. Now, I'm sure that if you're reading this for the first time, you're probably thinking to yourself, and the story ends there? Like, surely there must be more to be said. Because it feels like one of the oddest conclusions to a book that you might ever have read. It just comes so suddenly, out of nowhere, and it leaves a million questions unanswered. Like, so what did they do next? Did they go to the disciples and speak up? Or did they just keep quiet? Keep to themselves, worried about what everyone would think if they started saying something as preposterous as, hey everyone, we just saw an angel at the empty tomb who told us that Jesus is alive and is waiting to meet us in Galilee. What do you think they're afraid of? What exactly do you think they're worried about at this moment? Are they afraid of being ridiculed? Are they afraid that they might be wrong and that their hopes have been inflated only to be disappointed? Are they afraid of being the bearers of such controversial, earth-changing news? I mean, we've all seen those action movie thrillers, you know, which are all based on the length that the authorities will go to cover up an event that might cause panic or that it's against the national interest. Remember, the authorities have just put Jesus to death. And now there's news that maybe he's alive again. If you start saying that, there's every chance that you're going to be in trouble as well. Mark doesn't tell us exactly why they're afraid. He just ends his account. And he leaves us wondering, I think, what happened next. There is a small clue, I think, in verse 7. It comes in the way in which the women are described, in verse 8, the way in which they're described. They're described as trembling and bewildered. Trembling and bewildered, they're afraid, but they're also just, they don't understand what's going on. Bewildered. The reason why I think that's a small clue is because you'll notice there on your handouts that on the right-hand side I've said, back in chapter 5, the same word was used. It wasn't called bewildered, it was astonished in chapter 5. It was used to describe the reaction of people when Jesus brought Jairus' 12-year-old daughter back from the dead. Maybe it's a hint that the women here, though trembling, will actually work out what's going on. But we're not told that. And it's almost as if Mark is asking us readers, what do we think they did next? Or more pointedly, maybe Mark is asking us, what would we have done if we'd been there, if we were the ones who'd made the discovery? Maybe Mark is asking us how we are going to respond now that we've heard the news that Jesus is risen and that he's alive. Well, what do we make of all that? I want to finish just by making a few suggestions about what all this means for us. This account of the Jesus who was dead but is now alive. A couple of things I'd like to say. First is that, as you know, history records that those women did do as they were asked. They did go and tell the other disciples that Jesus had risen and had gone ahead of them into Galilee. And in so doing, that's the first step in the process of the good news about Jesus going literally to the ends of the earth. The good news about Jesus being alive reaching billions across the centuries, including us here today. And unashamedly, I want to say, if you're here as a visitor or a guest, this news, we want to share it with you as well. Of course, I realise the fact that literally billions of people have been convinced that Jesus did rise from the dead. I realise the fact that billions believe it doesn't necessarily automatically mean that he did. But can I say, I think it does mean that you can't just ignore the event. You can't dismiss it out of hand without taking the time to investigate and to see for yourself. I want to say this respectfully and gently. To write Jesus off without a proper investigation, it doesn't seem like the most honest or mature response. And I have to say, personally, I do find it a bit ironic that sometimes Christians get called closed-minded. If Jesus rose again, surely you can see it changes everything. If death cannot hold him down, it changes everyone's life in some way. Surely this Jesus is worth meeting, worth listening to. Let me make a couple of suggestions about how you could find out more. Work out if this Jesus is alive or not. They're actually both incredibly straightforward. The first suggestion would be to ask your friend who brought you to church today to take you through the rest of Mark's gospel. We've just read the last chapter, chapter 16, but obviously there's 15 that come before that. Maybe ask your friend who brought you if they would walk you through that, so that you can get a better feel for Jesus, so you can work out if you think that he's credible or not. Your friend who invited you believes that he rose from the dead, and your friend who invited you has a real and living relationship with this Jesus, which they'd love for you to have as well. So maybe ask them about it. But the other thing that you could do is, well, come back next week. Next Sunday, we're kicking off a new series. We're just going to start in another book of the Bible. We've been in Mark for a while. We're going to start in a book that's called 2 Timothy. What 2 Timothy is, really, it's a letter written by the Apostle Paul, someone who met the risen Jesus, and a young convert by the name of Timothy. Paul is writing to Timothy all about how the fact that Jesus is alive, it changes lives. It changes everything. So I'd love to invite you, to join us next week as we step into this next part of the Bible. What I'm saying is that if Jesus is risen, it changes everything. And at the very least, I think, if Jesus is alive, you can't settle for just being a Christmas and Easter kind of churchgoer. Many years ago, I remember welcoming someone to our Christmas Eve service here. I'd not seen them before, so when I welcomed them, I asked them if it was their first time with us. And I remember never forget what they replied. Their reply was, "Oh no, I'm not new. This is my church. I come here every Christmas." Now, can I say, if that's you today, then of course you are always welcome. And so, you know, we'll greet you just as warmly as hopefully you've been greeted today whenever you return. But one of the things I think that Mark 16 says is that if Jesus is alive, that changes everything. Or to put it slightly differently, belief always affects behavior. Belief always affects behavior. If it doesn't, perhaps it's because it's not actually a belief at all. Now, if I put that slightly differently and more positively, what we learn from Mark 16 is that, I think, Christians have something so good to share that we want the whole world to hear about it. We want the whole world to hear about it all year round. You see, when those women were told, "Go and tell the others," it was their Great Commission moment. That's the same charge for the members of this church. News like this is too good to keep us to ourselves. Not when we know just how much our world is crying out for hope. Let me finish with a word to all who are Christian, and particularly to the members of this church family. To all who have met the risen Jesus and now long to serve him. One of the things I think we learn from Mark chapter 16, from the account of these three loyal women, is that, yes, they are faithful to the end, but they're still left trembling and bewildered. Faithful, but still bewildered. What I think it reminds us is that doubt and fears, when it comes to following Jesus, they are always normal. Doubt and fears are always normal when it comes to following Jesus. They are even, you might say, inevitable. Actually, if you never have any doubt or any fear, it might be because you don't quite grasp what's at stake. So if doubt and fears are always normal, then how do we finish with a word of encouragement for what lies ahead? Well, what I want to do is take us back, actually, to a story in chapter 9 that we heard a little while ago, which I think so perfectly gives us the kind of confidence that I know many of us are looking for. Back in Mark chapter 9, Jesus meets a man who has brought his son, who has been awfully possessed by demons. He's brought his son to the disciples to heal him, but the disciples can't do it. And so out of desperation, the father approaches Jesus and desperately begs him for help. When Jesus sees the man, he tells him everything is possible for the one who believes. At which point, the man responds with some of the most heartfelt and heartwarming words in the whole Bible. Now, they're actually on screen from Mark chapter 9. The boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe, help me overcome my unbelief. I do believe, help me overcome my unbelief." And immediately, Jesus heals the boy. Now, the reason I want to finish here is because it's the most beautiful story that tells us what Jesus is like at his core. It's actually wonderfully moving, I think, for us to hear that in the end, what matters is not if we have doubts or fears, because we always will. What matters is what we choose to do with them. Will we be owned by those doubts and fears? Will we be defeated by them? Will we be driven away from Jesus because of them? Or will we carry them to Jesus, to the one who is dead but is now alive, and like in Mark 16, is waiting for us to come and find him? Remember, we heard that the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. If Jesus has gone through all that for us, we know he is not giving up on us now. Will you join me as I lead us in prayer? Heavenly Father, we thank you that you are always good to your word. You sent your Son, who said he'd lay down his life for us and that he would rise again as the first fruit of a great harvest to come. We thank you for what you've done for us in Jesus. We pray that you might give us courage and strength to keep looking to him. And we pray that wherever you place us in your world, you might give us opportunity to testify to this wonderful news, that Jesus is risen and that he is with us always to the ends of the earth. Amen.